Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Sam Houston Race Park opening day, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website as well, stevebick.com. Kind of a snowy, a little dusty kind of an overnight here in upstate New York. Kind of settling in for the winter. And down in Houston, I didn't check the forecast, but certainly if you were listening to Frank Hopf and Nick Tamaro, they made it sound like it was going to be a very nice opening day and opening weekend at the race park, and lots of excitement. And I'm just going, looks like mid-60s, then into the 50s as the early evening sets in, but nice and clear, and same for Friday, and maybe a little rain on Saturday. But looking forward to Sam Houston getting going, and I don't know how else to frame part of today's, certainly the first hour, other than to say I do not recall as really as sad a parade of passings as we've been discussing. And Houston, actually part of yesterday's news, because Josephine Abercrombie at 95 yesterday, and those that followed the stock reduction dispersal, knew that the operation of Pin Oak was winding down with Mrs. Abercrombie, reaching that age, I guess, as it were. And we'll have, at the very least, Mike Stidham and Graham Motion. But there's just no end to, I'm sure, the people that would come forward to pay tribute to Josephine Abercrombie. A remarkable, remarkable life. And I reference Houston because, of course, she was a socialite, debutante, in classic Texas oil family fashion. But she was first and foremost, that's a sidelight, frankly, to her life. She was a horsewoman and a real, authentic, not just, owner breeder horsewoman. She rode, and she showed horses from a young age. If you read not just the obituaries, but anything written about Mrs. Abercrombie. And, highly decorated in the show ring, as a teenager, an obvious passion for equine sport. And it went from saddlebreds to thoroughbreds with her father when they bought the property in Kentucky. And that, I think her interest in thoroughbreds undoubtedly came. She went to Lexington School and then went back to Texas and went to Rice. Her father left a big legacy of philanthropic work in and around Houston, as she did, and I'm sure there's, you know, I'm sure there's areas of her charitable efforts that, you know, not even fully aware, but she was full of life and a character. I think that's going to be, that'll be brought out, I'm sure. I reached for the training side when it came to Mike Stidham and Graham Motion, Donnie Von Hemel, but longtime farm manager, I'm sure, Cliff Barry, and John Adger, a longtime advisor. And in fact, Mike Stidham let me know that Chris Speckert, who we haven't talked to in too long, who's away from the racetrack and, you know, a handful of years now, but we used to really enjoy visits with Chris Speckert. And I guess he also an advisor and a confidant. The Pin Oak breeding success that I'm sure, you know, Graham and Mike Stidham will discuss, and I absolutely, I haven't heard back from Donnie Kay, but I'm sure he'll want to pay tribute as well, because they all, one thing that she was able to do was really spread, you know, the largesse and the generosity. I mean, you think about, I mean, Alternation, I guess, Alternation and I guess Synchrony recently too, right? With Stidham, but Alternation, you know, not that long ago, obviously with Donnie Kay, you know, the mid teens, Broken Vow, and I'm sure for Graham, you know, Broken Vow goes back to the, you know, to the aughts, 2001. So early, you know, fairly early in Graham Motion's development. And going back and looking at Broken Vow here, I just kind of forgotten Unbridled out of Wedding Vow. Broken Vow, kind of a fun, yeah, the kind of a good name, and of course, a had a nice career. I think a better career than people even realize, and then a very good stallion. Gosh, I mean, looking down the list of names, Bedankin, early on in the aughts as well. How about Gold Medal Dancer. Yeah. Excellent. Synchrony was the last big, you know, multiple graded stake winner for Pin Oak. So we'll talk to both Graham and Mike Stidham here in this first hour. When I reference what a difficult several days this has been, starting with Billy Turner, and then continuing into Bert Sonnier and the conversation that we had yesterday with Michael Dickinson on Tejas, in addition to Mrs. Abercrombie's passing yesterday. Later in the day, in the early evening, word came that Susie O'Kane, and this may not be a name that as many of you are familiar with, but in New York, Susie, a infectious presence and long-standing presence. She and husband Doc O'Kane and the influence involved in New York breeding, the work that they did together, managing Flying Zeke, you know, Carl Lizza, and a lot of influence for a long time. And Susie, you'll remember probably the last, I guess the last time we spoke probably was when on the air. I mean, I would see her, you know, you see her at Saratoga, and she and Doc would come to Skip Dickstein, Skip and Linda's, whenever there'd be a little dinner party or get together. But on the show, you last heard Susie with the Find a Cure stable. Remember that she put together, taken by breast cancer, and thoughts out to Doc, and we'll certainly have someone. I reached out to Jeff Canizzo, you know, Susie's work as you know, long standing with the New York Thoroughbred Breeders. She was on the TRF board for probably the last decade plus. She did TV work. I mean, she was, you know, just an integral part of the racing community and scene in New York for as long as anybody, I imagine, would remember. Certainly as long as I can recall. So two vibrant women in Josephine Abercrombie and Susie O'Kane, who absolutely were dedicated to the industry and to the lifestyle that the game represents. So we'll have Mike Stidham in just a couple of minutes, actually, and we'll get started on that. I didn't realize even that we got this far in. There's plenty of news. Give you the layout for today. Tony Black, going to catch up with Tony for the first time. Obviously, first week. And Sean Clancy, first of our This Is Horse Racing Saratoga special conversations. Sean will swing in as well in hour two. Tony Alivato from NYRA. I mentioned yesterday the confirmation, essentially, the news that didn't really come as a surprise. It had been rumored for a few months that Fox was going to get the broadcast rights to the Belmont Stakes. So get a couple of minutes in today with Tony. In hour three, get his, you know, his thoughts and what, you know, some of the motivation and some of the, you know, conceptual ideas are in terms of presenting Belmont on Fox, because, you know, obviously the relationship that, you know, delivers, you know, how 700 hours? What is the it's an enormous amount of, I think it's, I want to say 700 hours of broadcasting. Is that what the total is? I think it is. I think 750, which actually that's what we do, is we do 750 hours of radio. That's not the same as TV. The TV filling TV is a little different because it's visual. You don't have to, I can talk and cycle in visitors. A little different when it comes to TV. So looking forward to talking to Tony. We've also got the official numbers from last year's handle, and they, you know, as expected, you know, those numbers, you know, the $12 billion the number was tracking, and you know, that, again, not really a surprise, but a very good year. Probably you know, not worth celebrating, a little too much, to be honest, because, you know, hard to know how much of that is new business, as it were, new actual bodies placing bets. You'd like to know, you know, how much of this is computer-assisted wagering, and, you know, there's some, this was not a good, let's say, I don't know, 10 days. There were some, after things had quieted down, it seemed, on late odds changes, not a great couple of weeks. And I saw a couple myself that, you know, Naira has done a lot to mitigate the late odds changes by the way they're handling the computer money. And there's, you know, there's been others. There was one at Santa Anita the other day in the nightcap. In fact, I mean, I mentioned these two horses in the late pick five on Saturday. They ended up flip-flopping essentially as the favorite and second choice. And that was a considerable, I'm just reaching for it here, that riding with Dino and Alligato. Alligato was the favorite for the longest time, and riding with Dino kept coming down. And, you know, sometimes you watch those odds and you look at the Will Pays and you see where it's headed, and so it's not a surprise. Other times it can be surprise. You look at the Will Pays and it looked like Alligato was going to be favored, but then, you know, by the time the last flash came and the pools were flushed, riding with Dino had gotten down to 9-5. But I, you know, if you'd looked with 3-4 minutes to post, I think he was still 9-2. So this continues to be a vexing issue that really gets under the skin of horse players. Let's turn to the topic that I opened the show with, Josephine Abercrombie, an institution in the game, Pin Oak Stud, and Mike Stidham, one of the horsemen that lucky enough to have horses for Pin Oak and have a long, productive relationship with Mrs. A. And Mike, for horse players and for stakeholders, everybody, so sorry to hear of Mrs. Abercrombie's passing.
Yes, very, very sad day for racing. To lose someone like Mrs. Abercrombie, I mean, she was just so good for our sport. She was, you know, from an era that unfortunately is, you know, going past us. And I just wonder, you know, how we ever are going to, you know, fill the shoes of these kind of people like Mrs. A, who, you know, just did so much for the industry and was so good, you know, for horse racing. Very, very sad to see her go.
Talk about your connection with Pin Oak and how it, you know, how it came about.
Yeah. You know, I, back in the 80s when I was training for out in California, I was training for Harold Goodman, who was very close with Mrs. Abercrombie, and I had just only been training for a few years, and I actually got an interview to fly to Kentucky and meet Mrs. Abercrombie and interview to train for her. And at the time, you know, it just didn't work out, you know, for the situation. But then several years later, I did get the opportunity to, you know, train a few horses for her. And then from there, it became long-running relationship, and you know, we won graded stakes with Whimsy, and then obviously the biggest horse for me for with Pin Oak was Synchrony, who was, you know, almost $1 million earner and multiple, you know, graded stakes throughout his career. But it was just an honor to get the train for her. You know, the operation was just second to none. You know, I would go out and look at the yearlings every year, and Clifford Barry, you know, the farm manager, would be there, and Mrs. Abercrombie would drive up with her dog in the back of the car, and the horses would all come marching out, and every employee would have, you know, a Pin Oak uniform on, and the barns and the grounds were just immaculate. You know, you could eat off the floor in the barns. The horses were all just perfectly groomed, and everything was done systematically. You know, it was, you just don't see that much anymore. So, I remember, Mrs. Abercrombie had a ritual when she would fly into New Orleans to watch Synchrony run. It was the same routine every time, her and Clifford, and a lot of times, Chris Speckert would be on the plane with them, and, you know, they'd fly in, Synchrony would most of the time win, they'd pick up the trophy, and then always come to the barn, and whatever horses I had at the barn, we'd lead them out for her. She'd have her peppermints, and just loved, you know, she really, really loved her horses, and she would feed them peppermints. And then after that, head to Antoine's for New Orleans dinner, and then back on the plane to Lexington. So, and that was the ritual and routine every time. And, you know, I'll never forget those days.
There's actually a very funny little anecdote in one of the obits about the speaking of the plane, about I'm not sure who it was that was a couple of minutes late getting to the airfield, and she was waving goodbye as the plane took off.
No, I mean, she was, you know, she ran a tight ship, and everything was, you know, planned out perfectly, and everything she did, you know, was done first class. I mean, you know, the parties that we used to get invited to at the farm were all, you know, done so well, and you know, there was nothing that she was involved in that wasn't done completely, you know, at the top level.
There's a wonderful picture, actually. I think this is the it must be the blood horse piece. Yeah, there's a wonderful picture of the two of you in the blood horse, we're going to talk. I just heard from Donnie Kay. Donnie Kay von Hemel is going to join us, and Graham. You know, one of the things that you know kind of previewed this passing was the dispersal sale, Michael, and you know, that to me was sort of a message that, you know, we see this plenty of times, but right. Really a protracted run of steady success and consistency. Although, you know, there's some interesting quotes from Cliff Berry, who ran the farm 30 years?
Yeah, I think 35 years, yeah.
Unbelievable. He says that you weren't, you know, once you were signed on, it wasn't, you weren't guaranteed, a reserve seat on the bus. You have to produce it seems.
Without a doubt. She was a true businesswoman, and she didn't, you know, take anything lightly. You know, if you weren't getting the job done, you weren't guaranteed to be getting the next group of 2-year-olds that were coming in the pipeline. So, you know, you you had to do your job, and if you did, you were well rewarded. But she was all business, and that was the way she ran things. And you know, like I say, it was just an absolute honor for my career. You know, it was one of the big leg ups for me in the business. You know, getting to train for, you know, Pin Oak Farm was a definite boost for my career. And you know, I'll never forget all the wonderful things that came with it.
Are there any horses in the pipeline at all right now, or has everything been withdrawn?
Yeah, no. I mean, the dispersal pretty much, everything was sold in the dispersal, so there really is. I have nothing at this point, and I'm not sure that there's anything in training, or even any young horses that are still, going to be racing for Pin Oak.
Well, and such a familiar jacket, the gray and blue, and so many conversations with you and Donnie and Graham, and it's hard. It's hard when these kinds of outfits, when the curtain comes down.
Those kind of outfits are have been the backbone of our industry, and as we lose them, I just don't see that same type of breeding and racing operations behind them. So it's worrisome for what's out there to continue keep our industry. As strong as it's been, over the last, 50, 60 years.
Mike Stidham with us to lead the tributes to Josephine Abercrombie. And I know they'll be doing something at Sam Houston as well. And, of course, as I mentioned at the top of the show, the family, the philanthropy in the Houston area, as well as in Kentucky, and the Pin Oak's name on the Valley View, right? The Valley View stake,
right?
For as long as anybody could remember. Mike, I know you got horses coming out on the racetrack to train. A quick note, how is the start of the winter season for you at Fairgrounds?
It's been really good so far. We've had some wins already at Fairgrounds. We're getting off to a good start, and always glad to be in my home here in New Orleans. Even though we're only here 5 months out of the year, this is what Hillary and I call home now, and we love being here, and things are starting off well, so hopefully it continues.
Well, and on that front, I'm going to ask you about one horse, because you want to talk about outfits. I see where the Massons have Green Lantern has got, you've got a horse with, that looking to break the maiden in the second start on Saturday.
Yep. We've recently been training for Green Lantern, and we've got a couple for them right now, and we're trying to get get started, and they sent me a few young horses, so we're working on a relationship with them. So very, very happy to be involved.
Soulstone on Saturday in the 8th, second time starter Colby Hernandez aboard.
Yeah, that's a filly that first time out, the race was rained off the turf. She's got a turf pedigree. Did not run well on the dirt that day, but we were able to get her back in kind of quick to try to get her on the grass, hoping that the rain holds out for this weekend. So we'll see, but looking forward to getting her on the turf.
You got some horses at Gulfstream too, and I see that the 3-year-old gelding by Union Rags is coming back for a second start for Phoenix. Union Storm
made his first start and was a little green in his first start, but you know, ran on late in the race and split the field. So we're, again, another one that we're just hoping for some steady improvement with Phoenix.
Very nice. Michael, I really appreciate the tribute to Mrs. Abercrombie, and we look forward to talking to you as the winter progresses. We'll be down for Risen Star Week, and we'll see you then, but expect we'll probably, chance we'll talk soon before that.
You bet. Looking forward to it, and thanks as always for having me on, Steve.
Not at all. Michael Stidham, everybody, and one of three of the trainer conversations this morning. Graham Motion is going to join us next, and later, Donnie K. Von Hemel. And, you know, there's so many good horses that that all three of them have had, you know, as parts of their career. And I think, is there a chance that is Graham with us now? He is. Graham Motion joins us. And Graham, I would have much preferred to wish you a happy new year under better circumstances.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Graham, just off with Mike Stidham, and you know, the whole industry appreciates what Mrs. Abercrombie represents to the sport. Talk about your relationship with her, and I suppose Broken Vow top of mind.
Yes, I mean, look, Mrs. Abercrombie is a big reason for me being where I am at in my career. There's no doubt about it. She took a leap of faith and sent me those horses very early on. In my early days of training, I had Confessional, who I believe was already a grade one winner with Bill Mott. A horse called Trajectory that was also with Bill, and obviously Broken Vow. And, you know, that was in 1999, the year 2000, I guess. And people weren't sending me those kind of horses back then. So this was, she's a big reason for my success, and also just been an incredibly loyal owner to me and somebody who I'm just very indebted to.
How did she come to be aware of you? How, because you'd been training, what, 2-3 years at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I started in 1993, and she came to me in 1999, I guess it would have been.
Okay, so 6 years.
But still, I mean, I did not have a powerful stable. I, you know, was just starting to have some nice stakes horses. Clifford obviously approached me, Clifford Barry, who's run Mrs. Abercrombie's operation for all those years, and I just can't imagine that anyone, I can't imagine anyone being more loyal than Clifford has been to Mrs. A, and likewise. It's just one of those operations that you dream of training for when you start training. And, you know, those early days were lofty years when we had those nice horses running in graded races and traveling all around. And, you know, Mrs. A loved to go to Woodbine. We'd always make a trip to Woodbine every year. And I think Confessional went undefeated all but one race when I run her at Kentucky Downs, going probably further than she wanted to, which I'm sure Mrs. Abercrombie reminded me after the race.
One of the things, actually, that I brought up with Michael, Cliff Berry is quoted in the Blood Horse piece that, you know, that you weren't guaranteed, you know, you had to produce. That was a requisite for, you know, having a relationship with Pin Oak.
Yeah, and I don't know that I felt pressure to produce, but I did feel pressure to do the right thing and do right by the horses and make good decisions. And often if you didn't make good decisions, Mrs. A wasn't afraid to point that out to you or question why you made that decision. You certainly knew where you stood with Mrs. Abercrombie. that was always the case. And for that, I think that makes for a better relationship, to be honest. If more people were more straightforward with the way they treat you and handle you, and to have that kind of open relationship, I think is much more productive.
Have to bring up Broken Vow in particular, and one of the things that a piece of news like this does, as it did earlier this week with Bert Sonnier's passing, and we talked to Dash Goff about No Double. When you look at some of these horses that are coming up, and you know, the ones that are more recent that we just talked about, Synchrony with Michael, and I'm sure Alternation we'll talk about with Donnie Kay, but you know, you go back 20 years to Broken Vow, and you kind of forget. At least I had. I had forgotten, you know, what a good two-turn horse he is. You know, sometimes the progeny of a stallion colors your memory of a horse's career, because of course he I think is you know thought of for you know. Fast early sprinter types, and yet I look at this career, Graham, and you know the Island win and the near misses in the Meadowlands Cup and the Fayette, a huge performance in the Ben Ally, and he faced good horses on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I believe he won the Island at Monmouth. I mean, he was a good horse, and I can't emphasize enough how I was. You know, I was pretty green at the time. It was very early in my career, and it was the first time I think I'd had a horse on that stage. And, you know, I think we did right by the horse, and you know, he ended up being a very successful stallion, and I, of course, had a lifetime breeding right to him, which was, you know, financially rewarding to me. So, yes, I mean, he was a very important horse in my career, no doubt.
I one thing I had also forgotten, he didn't debut until February of his three-year-old year.
No, he was a tough horse. He was a really big, strapping horse, and he had issues, I believe, early on. I think he also maybe came from Bill. Bill might have had him as a two-year-old. But he was, it's not surprising to me that he didn't run as a two-year-old. He was such a big, kind of backward horse. And he was tough. I mean, he dropped everybody. there wasn't an excise rider that didn't get caught by his idiosyncrasies, I guess.
That's great. He won at first asking, 7/8, and then actually won his first four starts.
You mean I got a horse to win first time out?
That's you crazy. Did at 7/8 too, just like Shug.
He must have been a good horse.
Actually, Graham, what happened that he, after the Sir Barton win, what happened that he was sidelined for those 7-8 months?
You know, I believe he had, I don't think it was anything major. He might have had a chip in an ankle, maybe had ankle surgery. I honestly don't remember.
Well, then he came back and had a terrific four-year-old campaign that included all those races, ran 10 times as a four-year-old, went 5-2-2. You know, the only off the board was the first start back, actually, at Gulfstream, going 7/8. But then, you know, then he tore off the rest of the season. So really, after that, never missed the board. Edgar rode him quite a bit, and then Ramon, the last five starts of his career, and at the end only got beat by Gander in the Meadowlands Cup, and connected in the Fayette, and then a terrific stallion career as well. Well, Graham, any other personal, you know, kind of personal moments, dinners with her, and you kind of you know, the relationship anecdotes?
You know, we had some great trips together. You know, traveling with Mrs. A was always an adventure. I remember particularly one trip to Canada. I believe it was the weekend Ramon was going up to ride Confessional and Trajectory, and I got a call from Ramon at the airport that there was an issue, that he wasn't going to be able to get on the plane in Philadelphia. And I called Clifford, and I said, Clifford, I think we've got a problem here. Ramon might not be able to make the trip. So he said, well, hold on a minute. You know, let me call you right back. And he called me right back and said, Mrs. A's plane's on his way to pick up Ramon in Philadelphia. We'll see you up there. I think that was something that Ramon and I always have a chuckle about. And when I texted Ramon to pass on the news yesterday, you know, the one comment he made was, which is exactly my sentiment, is we both have a lot to thank us for.
Yeah.
Undeniably, her support was key in my career, Ramon said to me. And I think that, you know, for both of us, you know, Ramon had such a relationship with Confessional. I mean, she was a tough filly. And Ramon just had a knack with her, and he would get on her in the morning and I'd say, Ramon, do you need a pony or anything? He's like, no, I'll be fine. But she was difficult, and he just had a way with her that sort of was very typical of Ramon and the way he handled horses and his sort of sensitive touch. So it brings back great memories. You know, I was just so fond of her. I haven't seen her much in the last few years, which is sad. You know, now that somebody's passed on, I obviously regret not seeing her more. But really good memories, and just very fortunate to be a part of it. And, you know, I can't express enough what a part Clifford has been of the operation. He's been so loyal and so dedicated. Just a great, great operation. You know, there are less and less operations like Tinnock, I'm afraid, these days.
No, that's very much the same tone that Mike Stidham took as well, that, you know, the game has changed in that regard.
You know, Mrs. A lived a full life. You know, I even some sure. of the things I read yesterday, I couldn't even believe, you know, some of the things she did about all her ribbons in the horse show in Madison Square Gardens. And, you know, I was aware of the boxing team, but I was fascinated to read some of the articles about her boxing teams. I mean, I think there's so much about Mrs. A that people don't know beyond horse racing, and also her philanthropy, you know, her,
yes.
the school in Lexington, and so many things she's done. She just led such a full life. Just an extraordinary person. We were so lucky to have her.
Well, Graham Motion joining us, and Graham, I actually owed you a call beyond this, because really the last, I don't know, 90 days of last year, things seems like everybody, you know, kind of ran into shape, and every time I looked up, you were either breaking maidens or winning some, you know, some nice stakes. So things into the winter quite well.
Yeah, I must say I feel good about the stable. We had a really quiet couple of years between COVID and kind of me downsizing a little bit. We sold one of our barns at Fair Hills, so we had to cut back on numbers. And I, you know, obviously you want to concentrate on quality. I mean, probably 80% of my barn and just turned 3-year-olds now. We don't have many older horses. Because we had a really quiet couple of years and we kind of needed to regroup. But I'm excited about the 3-year-olds. To win those two stakes at Aqueduct Thanksgiving weekend, that was really encouraging. I mean, I think that's what it's all about. And when you kind of need to rebuild to have the young horses coming up, it's exciting. So I do feel like we're in a much better place than we were probably a year ago or even 2 years ago.
Now, I could really sense it too. You look at results at the major ovals where you participate, and I kept seeing kind of a steady drumbeat, and of course the horses at Laurel and Aqueduct through the winter, and then down in Florida. And in fact, let me ask about the Blame colt that looks to break a maiden today, Defensible for Starlight.
Yes, I really hope to run him on the grass today, because I think he's going to be even better on the grass. But, you know, he handled it to Peter Fine last time, and I'm a big believer in, you know, this is the way we should be going. When races come off the grass, it's great to have the option of running on the synthetic. So we'll run him today. I've put some blinkers on him. I think he's a horse that's starting to figure it out. So I don't know if he's good enough to win today, but I think he'll be competitive in the race.
And I understand, I'm just hearing that it is going to be Tapita today.
Yeah, they are off the grass.
Yeah. This was a $400,000 baby, so some anticipation for Defensible, and just looking ahead actually to Aqueduct as well. So what about Sweet Lies?
Yeah, this filly's been a disappointment to me. She came out of the OBS sale. I was quite high on her going into her first race in New York on the dirt. She was a little disappointing that day. I stretched her out last time on the grass and kind of ran a similar race. So, you know, we're going back to the dirt. I think she handles the dirt fine. I'd like to think she's going to be competitive, but she's going to have to improve off her last two races. She's a filly I've always thought a little more of than she's shown in the afternoon.
Well, and we could also, we're on a maiden skein, looking ahead to actually next Tuesday, you got a Painter filly that's making a second start at Parks, and Carol Cedeno is going to ride. This is Misty Mauve for Mr. Armstrong.
Yeah, and this filly ran well first time out, finished a solid second. We actually, Eclipse ended up acquiring the filly that beat her that day. The numbers were very good from that race. So I think if she makes a step forward, she should be very tough in there. Maybe she doesn't even need to take a step forward. She was a little green first time out. Carol really wanted to ride her back. So this seems like a good spot. Timing's right.
Got to ask you about Ambitus, the maiden winner from New Year's weekend.
Yeah, filly I like a lot. I thought she ran well first time out at Aqueduct. I actually had this filly ready to run early in the spring, and she had an accident in a stall where she broke her jaw.
Oh, my God.
Missing. Yeah, I mean, it was horrendous. Poor thing. Although I think it looked worse for us than it was for her, because she didn't miss a beat. She was, once they had wired her jaw, she was able to eat the next day and made a really good recovery, and you wouldn't know she'd even have an issue now. But anyway, that was a setback for her. But, you know, the first time I ran her at Aqueduct, I thought she ran well. A little bit typical of one of my horses, first time out, you know, was going to improve for the performance. And, you know, she did it really nicely the other day. I was a little surprised the numbers came back weak. I don't know how the numbers are relating on the Tapita, because her first number was much better than her second number when she won, which was a little surprising to me.
Where are you with the stake winners? That Side Dog is one of those horses, the Central Park winner that I had actually wanted to talk to you about going back to last month.
Yeah, you never call me anymore, Steve.
No, that that wasn't by choice. I'm telling you, I absolutely had meant to, and then we took a little early Christmas break.
So we decided not to run him in Florida this winter. He could end up running in March, perhaps, but we backed off him, gave him a little break. He's a horse that I think is pretty exciting. I mean, he hasn't done much wrong in two starts. Maybe even a trip to England. Who knows?
And how about the Tepin winner, Vergara?
Likewise. I mean, I did back off her a little bit. She's galloping at Tampa. I would imagine probably the Tampa Oaks would be her first target.
Very nice. Well, as you said, there's no shortage of breakout candidates, whether maiden winners or allowance and early stake winners. There's even that Algorithms for Mr. Hancock, right? The Script.
I think he could end up being a grass horse. You know, again, his numbers have been a little light. He's a really impressive individual, beautiful horse, very classy. I might have run him back a little quickly, and I ran him three times in fairly close succession. I was a little disappointed with him the other day, although I think he's going to improve with two turns and may need the grass. It's a grass family.
Well, Graham, there's no shortage of others that I will save for happier times. I really appreciate the opportunity to have people hear from you to pay tribute to Mrs. A. Josephine Abercrombie, a well-lived life, obviously, and dedicated to the sport for decades. I appreciate it.
I don't think you could pack more into your life than Mrs. Abercrombie did, and she's just such a positive influence.
Exactly. Exactly. Graham Motion, everybody, who, of course, you follow on Twitter, and Herring Swell Stables, the website there. And we look forward to seeing you somewhere along the line. And obviously, we're going to talk stake winners. That seems very soon, Graham.
Take care, Steve. Thank you.
You too. Graham Motion, everybody. And the second of our three appreciations of Josephine Abercrombie this morning. Jeff Canizzo is going to join us. I included in our opening the equally sad loss particularly for the New York breeding and racing community of Susie O'Kane. And Jeff, who, of course, had long associated with the thoroughbred breeders in New York and now working for Naira in a advisory capacity as more or less a conduit relationship with Albany. But he enjoyed a long friendship as well with Susie O'Kane. And so Jeff is going to join us, and he's with us now. Jeff, so far this morning, the first hour, I've had to just say how sorry I am about yesterday's news, Josephine Abercrombie, and for racing fans in New York, the very familiar and outgoing, vibrant personality in Susie O'Kane. So very sorry. Jeff, Case, you want to pick up with Jeff? Is he there? All right, Casey's going to pick up because he says he's definitely there. Trying to firm up a time for Donnie Kay. The situation, one thing I didn't mention, the training, they've been pushing training back in the mornings with this cold spurt at Oaklawn. So,
hello.
Hey, Jeff, there he is. Jeff Canizzo joins us. And Jeff, I'm so sorry about Susie O'Kane. I've tried to explain to people who aren't New York based that her influence and her presence in and around New York racing and breeding, really her and Doc just a fixture in New York.
It's unbelievably sad, and there's so many people that are close to Susie around the country in her sport. This week's been a sad week for that, and she played such an important role in a lot of different associations and groups that I'm sure people aren't aware of. I got to know Susie in my prior capacity running the Breeders Association, and I met her 2007 timeframe, and for several decades prior to that, she was just a fixture, as you said, in the New York landscape. If you didn't know Susie, you weren't really in New York. It's unbelievably sad that she's no longer with us, and I think there's a lot of people mourning her loss.
The role that she and Doc enjoyed at Highcliff, give everybody a bit of a primer on their on their role, because they essentially ran the farm for Carl Lizza, and they could be counted on as bloodstock advisors. There were so many roles that Susie could fill, and when you look at her I don't want to call it a resume, but, you know, called upon to help the TRF, you know, during that difficult period, which she did, whether it was marketing or publicity or, you know, nuts and bolts management, she could really do it all.
She did. She really did. I mean, she certainly lived life to the fullest. I can just, so to give, you know, some of Susie's background, she came, her and Doc, Linwood O'Kane, her husband, who was a repro vet, came from Louisiana to New York back in, I believe, it was 1985. And they relocated here. They worked at, Doc took over at the Schoenborn Brothers Farm in Coxsackie, and was there, I believe, until 1989 is when Susie and he went to Highcliff Farm. So Carl was his Flinesy Stables farm that he had in Delanson, New York, which from 1989, you know, 3 decades later was one of the largest farm in New York State. They fold the most mares in the state. They stood the most stallions in the state, and they were a staple. Susie ran all of the marketing, all of the stallion promotion, the administration. You know, she was the face of Highcliff Farm for all intents and purposes. And, you know, through that period from 1989 to, you know, when Highcliff closed, you know, this past decade, she played a lot of key roles. She was involved in 2000 in the VLT legislation. When that was first being discussed, she was, you know, politically involved, which, you know, many people probably don't know, but she played a role in that. She was heavily involved with aftercare before aftercare was even a term, right? She was on the board of the TRF, longstanding for a long time, and she, you know, did things to rescue and save horses. She loved horses. She came from a quarter horse background. Doc introduced her to thoroughbreds, and you know that's where it all began for her. And she, you know, back to the aftercare part of it. You know, she started something called the Find a Cure Stable. You know, several decades ago, where she actually campaigned some horses that she syndicated, that all of their earnings went to benefit Breast Cancer Research Foundation. She worked at Capital OTB. She had her own show called Susie's Corner, right? That I'm sure, you know, some of the, you know, the older listeners on your show may be familiar with, but it was from a while ago, where, you know, she talked about, you know, racing and you know, many different things in terms of marketing of the sport. And, you know, she was a pioneer, really, for women's movements and history. And she was just, she was, you know, a Renaissance person and way in front of her time on so many different things. You know, she was modest, such that, you know, she wasn't, it wasn't out there and wasn't broadcast. She just did it. And, you know, I can't say enough about her, because she just was really special to me, you know, and I'm certainly going to miss her. And I know a lot of other people are too.
Well, and I mentioned at the top of the show that the last time I think we had Susie on air was during the run of Find a Cure, which was really a concept that I'm a little surprised has not continued on to some degree, right? It actually kind of came to the fore around the same time that the Oaks Survivor Walk at Churchill on Oaks Day, you know, which is, you know, a very moving portion of Oaks Derby weekend, you know. But that was really, I would say that and the Find a Cure Stable was really the start of the whole Pink Out you know, the pink days, right? That, you know, the cancer awareness, there's another legacy of Susie O'Kane.
1,000,000%. You know, those pink ribbons that we see, obviously she didn't create the pink ribbon, but at the track, she certainly did. The days that we have there, here in Saratoga, she was completely behind. And again, those, it's just one example of something that, you know, probably a lot of people aren't familiar with, that, you know, Susie single-handedly was responsible for. And, you know, she just served so many different capacities. She was a staple here in Saratoga, you know, in the box area, you know, Doc and her box, you know, they held court there. Susie held court there. And you couldn't walk by that area without talking to Susie about racing, right, and about breeding and about the sport and about, you know, all the things that were good. She was literally full of life. And for all the people that are listening that knew her, certainly know that.
You know, I just wanted to pull up Find a Cure, and I had forgotten this, but now it absolutely makes me, you know, brings it right back clearly. John Parada had the very nice Phil the Power that I think ran as a like a lessee. John was going to run was going to run Phil in a race either in New York or at Monmouth. I'll ask John about this, but I see Phil the Power's name. You know, she also she had horses with Rick the same way, with Rick Violette, Paul Barrow up at Finger Lakes, partnered with Sandy Goldfarb and Michael Dubb. Gives you an idea of. And actually, there's a Find a Cure horse that ran as recently as 2020.
Right. Yeah. No, that was her baby. She brought that to life. And she did. And she did so much too for the stallion industry in New York. I mean, she went through the period of you know, the mom and pop stallions to, you know, attempting to make it what it is today. You know, and she saw so many different phases too. We used to talk all the time about how, you know, the breeding landscape specifically was changing over the period of those several decades. And she just was so much always in front of it. She really was an advertising genius too. I mean, she had thoughts and you know, pieces that she was putting out in front of people that you know, it always drew attention, and she was very smart, always knew what she was doing, and was always two steps in front of everyone else.
Well, I imagine there'll be, I know there weren't any immediate plans that Doc laid out, but I see the donations to breast cancer research, to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. There'll probably be a life celebration at Saratoga this summer, undoubtedly, and I imagine there's probably lots of candidates to have a Susie O'Kane race. There might be one every week, Jeff. If everybody that cared about Susie and appreciated her come forward, there'll be a race on a regular basis this summer.
I think so, and I'm sure that there will be celebrations for her, and I know that many people are going to want to do that, and they're already planning to do that, and the various associations for sure need to recognize her and do that. So I would expect many things here as the months and summer approaches, and you know, there was no better storyteller, or if you never heard one of Susie O'Kane's jokes, you've never heard a joke, and that's what I'll remember Susie for, is you know, her sense of humor and what she brought into the room and how she controlled the room every time she walked into it.
She was just so much fun, and without trying to, to dominate conversation or, she just socially, I would see her most often at the Dickstein's, at Skip and Linda's. And, and when I reached out to Skip, there were a few names that popped in my head for Susie, but then Skip. Virtually there isn't anybody in the breeding game in New York that, that wouldn't, I'm sure wouldn't want to come forward. But, you had kind of a ubiquitous connection to her. And actually, we should, given how much she did for the racing landscape in New York, we should also give you a chance to update everybody on your role with NYRA right now. And certainly, there's been no shortage of headlines or at least advisories about the misguided legislature efforts from downstate. But the missives I see from the We Are New York Racing group that has really coalesced, Jeff, bring everybody up to speed on what you've been working on, this last year plus.
Sure. No, thank you. There's a lot, as always, going on in New York as it relates to racing and government. And, we put together a coalition, We Are New York Racing, back, right at the end of Saratoga, basically. And it's made up of all the stakeholders, right? And even more importantly, all the ancillary businesses that are a trickle down of our industry, right? The suppliers, the vendors, and you can go down the list that we always talk about. But it's an educational program for the state and the legislature. And why is that important? Because here we are, several decades into VLT revenue, for example. It's because the legislature continually evolves and changes to new faces. There's a lot of people that have become elected in the state of New York that are downstate, that couldn't tell you the front end of a horse from the back end of a horse. And that's why it's important to educate those people on who we are, why we, what we do, and why we're important. And that's what New York horse racing is about. And it's been very effective in this short period of time. I mean, we have dozens upon dozens of groups that make up the coalition on both sides of the industry, standardbred and thoroughbred. Some other things NYRA specific too that we have going on. We're looking to do two different things this year. That's our key focus and strategy is, one is finally getting to the point where we have authorization to redevelop Belmont Park, which has been talked about for a very long time. And we need that authorization done through the state in order to invest a considerable amount of money into making Belmont Park a place for the future for downstate racing. That's a key focus. Another key focus we have going on in government is relating to fixed odds and offering thoroughbred racing content on our mobile sports wagering platforms that are about to come online. I'm being told possibly next week here in the state of New York. But currently those mobile providers cannot offer horse racing. Right, you can only bet through your ADW through a pari-mutuel system, right? Like NYRA bets. What we see as a huge opportunity is providing content, horse racing, on all of those new platforms. I mean, the reality is it is the wave of the future. You're bringing a whole new customer set into the marketplace. Right, the customer set that we should be focused on, which is people betting, and they're in need of content. Right, these providers need content. There's a lot of time window between an NBA game and an NHL game and a baseball game, for example. Right, so they're looking for content, and what we're looking to do is to change the law to allow NYRA, for example, to offer and sell that content to the mobile sports betting platforms, which would then in return actually be a fixed odds bet on certain bet types, win, place, and show, for example, where we see it as an opportunity. So those are some key things government-wise going on, and hopefully we make some great progress here in the next few months.
Well, I appreciate it. Every time we get Pat McKenna on, or in this case, really it is a corollary to Susie's work and dedication to the equine sport landscape in New York that basically creates 20,000 plus jobs. It's an economic impact of over $3 billion. So, Jeff, I appreciate you. I knew that you'd want to pass along your respect for Susie O'Kane. And there's, just like I've said with Graham Motion and Mike Stidham about Mrs. Abercrombie, there's just countless people who adored Susie and worked with her and alongside her, and her influence will long be felt in New York breeding and New York racing. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve. And I know Doc appreciates it as well. So thank you.
I appreciate it mentioning it. And I'm always hesitant to, in such proximity to, to the news to reach out. But at some point, maybe, we circle up back up here and get Doc to join us and share his appreciation too for Susie. We'll take a break here, top of the hour, a little past the top of the hour. When we come back, we got Tony Black to circle in. We've got Sean Clancy, Tony Alavato. Speaking of New York racing, well, the news, of course, that was finalized, Fox and Belmont Stakes coverage. Talk to Tony for a couple of minutes in the 11 o'clock hour. Rich Eng, and assuming we can figure out when to, with this training schedule that's going on at Oaklawn, maybe Donnie Kay. We'll see. I hope so. All right. First break on this Thursday at the Races Series XM. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup.